Hello, and welcome to Astrology Studio for Taurus for 2025 into 2026. That is really to say for right now. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer here with you for the next hour or so. Actually, I've got this meeting scheduled out for about an hour and 15 minutes, which includes a couple of music breaks to let the material kind of soak in a little bit and also give some structure to the reading for my process and then also for your playback. So, you know, maybe you can jot down whether things were in the first, second, or third part. I'm doing this reading in audio today. I'm not sure if we promised video in the literature. Audio is my native medium. Video is really hard for me, and I am just not feeling like getting in front of the camera. And often when I do, we get like kind of half the result for double the energy. So I'd rather not worry about whether I'm making eye contact with the camera. I can keep my eyes on the chart. And what I am planning to do, though, is once I've got this done, to do a very short just walkthrough of the chart so you can have a sense of what's going on. And you'll be looking at the solar chart, which we're including, of course, on all the locations where this reading appears. Well, there's just actually one. And what I'm working with today, for the first time, actually, is the entirely new chart. I am out of the visual part. I'm leaving out, you know, the retrogrades of planets back into signs, and I'm just going to visually. I'll account for that in the reading, but talk about the new signs that planets are in, and you know, we're in a wild moment here, and if everything seems like you know, we can't keep a grip. And frankly, I do not know how people are holding it together. I am a strong person. I'm flexible. I have set my life up so that I have the maximum capacity to mostly get my work done. I've got a nice kitchen also, but most of what I do is I like figure out how I'm going to get these readings and horoscopes and the program's all done, and I'm just feeling like maximum output, and just the emotional energy needed to manage and to manage the different personalities in my life and the speed at which the different experiences and events and all that come up. And, you know, as stable as my life generally is, you know, people around me are not necessarily that stable. And there's just a lot of, I think a lot of holding it together that we are doing right now. And not really accounting for the fact that we're just kind of basically standing in the middle of an earthquake. That just keeps going on and on. It just keeps happening. And the way that looks, astrologically, going as Alice Bailey recommends, from the general to the specific. So starting in the broadest generalities, all of the planets are in the process of switching signs. So the moon and the sun, they're like switching signs all the time. But Mercury and Venus have been involved in a retrograde process that has them dancing back and forth over the Pisces-Aries line. That's unusual to have the two planets interior to the Earth in a pattern where they're straddling, in this case, the Aries point. That's a pretty big deal because it is like the hot spot in the whole zodiac. And then Mars was recently in a retrograde where it was going back and forth between Cancer and Leo. I've got to get that in to the chart here. Just to make a little note to myself to cover that. And those are just the inner planets, right? Which tend to not be the ones that get the most effect. They're not usually, they can, but there's always something bigger. They can what? They can pick society up and spin it on their finger. But when they do, there's always something bigger going on. I mean, for example, there was a very slippery Mercury retrograde in early 2020 that was kind of the scrim, the cover for the global lockdown. It was kind of like a little bit of anesthetic, basically. But then there were massive planetary movements, Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto alignment, for example, in Capricorn, Pluto square Eris, stuff that just happens once in a lifetime, if that much. Some of these things happen like every 150 years. And so what we've got going on now, like in the wake of all that, like we still haven't recovered from 2020. People are acting like we have. It's nice to go out and not have, people whipping out a gun to make sure that you've got a mask on or threatening to arrest you in the health food store. Like, why are we in the health food store? Aren't we in the health food store so that we are taking care of our bodies? Isn't the whole point of a health food store terrain theory? Like, if I didn't believe in terrain theory, quote unquote terrain theory, super controversial, I would just live in the cereal aisle at Wegmans, you know, at whatever Stop and Shop or whatever. Aren't we all terrain theory people here in the health food store, like buying allegedly organic shit for like three times the price? Okay, so with that behind us and all of that, but it's not really behind us. We're kind of dragging it along. And as with any injury, which we have sustained an injury, it's easy to re-injure it. If you hurt your ankle, you got to be careful. You're not going to hurt it again. You got to take extra care and keep it strong. And, wear good boots and be mindful. Every time an injury is added, there is a necessity for mindfulness added, right? That's not how it works. And so that's the Chiron factor. That's where the injury turns into a source of strength, because to heal the injury, you have to maintain awareness of it. And that can be for quite a long time. And then that awareness kind of coalescence process is where we get the benefits of Chiron. Chiron, very active right now, massively so, and I will get into that. So, so just to quickly recap, we've covered the inner planets, right? Mars, Venus, and Mercury straddling two signs in long retrograde processes that kind of bridge 2024 and 2025. And Pluto has just changed signs. That took a long time. It ended in November. Pluto's now taken up residence in Aquarius. Will not be going back to Capricorn. That happened twice. That's very unusual. So that stretched out that whole sign change of Pluto. And also, Neptune just changed signs. And Saturn's about to change signs. That doesn't happen very often. Neptune was, 14 years through Pisces or some such? Saturn changes signs approximately every two and a half years. And Jupiter's changing signs. According to Neil deGrasse Tyson, those are the planets. Hey, I don't know if he counts Pluto or not, but both gas giants, both ice giants, changing signs, and all the terrestrial, the rocky, earthy, terrestrial worlds, all in these long processes of changing signs during retrograde. So that's pretty much, apart from whatever was going on with the Mayan calendar, in the run-up to 2012 and in 2012, and I believe the 13th Baktun did end in 2012. I basically took that apart and put it back together for 20 years till I was convinced that I had some sense of what I was talking about. But when you looked at the Western astrology, which should have some parallel, even though there's not really a direct correspondence, and Pluto wasn't discovered, and You know, maybe the Mayans knew about Chiron, as Barbara Hand Clough suggests. I don't quite know how they would spot a comet, invisible comet, out past the orbit of Saturn. But anyway, that's a little New Age wisdom for you. The thing that made 2012 2012 was exactly what we're going through right now, which is a lot of planets changing signs around the same time. But what's happening now is happening much more quickly. And you think signs, like, what's a sign? You know, what's a sign got to do with anything? Well, a sign is a measure of the number of degrees the planet has moved from the Aries point. So the sign, it matters. Rick Tarnas managed to write the entire, I think, 700-page Cosmos and Psyche and never mention ever one of the 12 zodiac signs. Clearly an editorial strategy to not be conflated with the New York Post, where I have learned more astrology from the New York Post than I have learned from Rick Tarnas. No reflection on Rick Tarnas, a reflection on the quality of the horoscope of the New York Post, but I digress. We are in the midst of a lot of change, and you can see that change because when you see Saturn, Neptune, and Jupiter, and Uranus. I forgot Uranus. How could I forget Uranus? Uranus about to change signs. So there's two gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, two ice giants, Neptune, Uranus, all changing signs together. This is immense. With Pluto in the background, you really have to, you know, this is like, you don't really read these charts as much as you say, what the ever-loving fuck is going on around here? And we can see that reality is being totally rewritten, recreated, redefined, remade, basically. The world is being remade beneath our feet, beneath the immediate level of consciousness, and we are taking the ride. So what I would like to do in this session is in this, you know, in the whole reading here is go through the new positions and talk a little bit about the old positions, because particularly with outer planets, the transits that we experience that might last, you know, in the case of Pluto and Capricorn, for example, that when you measure it end to end, all the way out from the tips of its toes to the tips of its fingers, stretching all the way out, we have 2008 to 2024. That's a while. That's 16 years, right? That's a while. Neptune, we barely remember the world when Neptune was in Aquarius. We got so used to Neptune being in Pisces. And now Neptune is in Aries. So this is, you know, as has been said, all new players in a whole new ballgame. One of the things that is probably really good that is over, and by good I mean feels good and like, oh my God, been there, done that, is Pluto in Capricorn. And among the things that make Taurus, Taurus, is Capricorn in the ninth place. And so the solar chart, which is the chart that I'm reading, which gets you most of the way to the natal chart. Amazing, I know, there's no birth time, there's no birthplace, there's no birth year, nothing like that. But astrology is holographic, and this is kind of taking the best of astrology and using it kind of like a tarot spread. And it's about right now, and the houses are real. So what you've lived through, one of the things that makes Taurus, Taurus is Capricorn on the ninth place. The ninth place is spirituality and worldview. And Capricorn is it's orthodox. It is almost all legacy material. And there are a few different ways to manifest this, and I haven't gone back through. I'm kind of not in touch with most of the Tauruses that I, you know, was very involved with earlier in my astrology career, diversity of friends and lovers and people who were just kind of permanent fixtures, and my wife are they're doing their own thing, and I haven't had a chance to really interview them about the history of like, okay, so what was it about? But I suspect that Pluto in Capricorn was incredibly tumultuous, and it was tumultuous in the sense of the ability to plan, the ability to foresee, which is a ninth house thing, your ability to live in a way that is embracing of a wider world. That's the ninth house. It's typically restricted under the influence of Capricorn. So, I mean, for example, Carl Jung once said that most religion is a substitute for religious experience. And thinking back, I can't believe that I even had to think too hard about what that meant, but let me give you an example. So you flip through the Bible, right? And this guy has a big prophecy, and that person, God comes to them, and God must talk to a couple of ladies there in the Bible somewhere. I haven't read the whole thing. But all through the Bible, Ezekiel sees the fire wheel turning in the air, and Moses gets the tablets, and those are religious experiences, right? Moses meets God. Ezekiel sees the UFO, the Red Sea parts. Jesus has all these experiences. The apostles in the Bible, they have this experience of being, you know, directly in the story, you know, in universe of the story, have the experience of being directly with the manifestation of God. That's religious experience. And all religion does generally is worship the religious experiences of others. That's really not a spiritual path. But that's a lot what it's like to have the ninth house in Capricorn. Because the religious experience of the ninth house, the open door to the possibility of a wider world, the ability to envision your life, to make plans, to consider like all the possibilities of where you want to go, can get very boxed in under this highly structured influence of Capricorn and all the legacy material. And the ninth is spirituality, and it is religion. When you put Capricorn onto it, it takes on a much more religious tone. It is not the Lord personally coming to you and saying, "Hello, my child. You are my child. You are a creature of the universe. You are free. Go forth and love." It'd be wonderful if God said that to you. But what you get is the priest baptizing the baby. You see what I'm saying? It's vicarious. And that's a lot about the nature of Capricorn on the ninth. So then add Pluto. And by the way, all of that vicariousness comes with all the packed baggage of all the moralism and all of the like statism, as it's now called, the like worshiping of the state and the government, you know, and the government always gets its power on religious terms. I mean, most people file their tax return as a matter of faith, not as a matter of the IRS knocking on their door, right? I have to honor the Lord, right? You put the thing in the mail on April 15th. Okay, then spake Pluto for 15 years, kind of crunching and crashing and banging and dismantling and all that, and that's over. And what is the likely result is that as the dust settles, which it still is doing, and you look back on these experiences, you get to see what you've sorted out. You get to see the attachments that you gradually let go of. And I would say that through the process of Pluto in Capricorn, transiting your ninth solar house, you are emerging on the other side with some sense of your soul as an active fully engaged learning process. That's what the soul is. Okay, so that's good. Now you've got something real special, something new, which is Pluto in Aquarius. And the thing special and new about Pluto in Aquarius is that this now, this influence of Pluto now enters the world itself, the outer world outside the cloisters, outside the cathedral, off campus, as it were. You know, the difference between the ninth and the tenth is when university students, college students, whatever, that's ninth, right? College campus is the ninth house. And they say, well, in the real world and in real life, they mean is, oh, over in the tenth house next door, where you do business and you build your reputation, you're going to carry for your whole life. Usually what you do on the campus stays on the campus pretty much. And if not, it's like chalked up youthful indiscretion. Ah, but the 10th house, that's your real reputation. That's your calling. That's your mission. That's where you're going to express your power in the world. And now for the next approximately two decades, you're going to have Pluto there. And this is some form of a big calling. It is one of many instances in your chart where there is some form of a shift of orientation. And in this case, in the case of Pluto in Aquarius in the 10th place, that is about a bigger calling in the world. And I will say this is not generally the ballywick of Taurus. Taurus is not, you know, this is one of the like original homebody signs and not needing too much change. I have good, strong Taurus. I've got Venus in Taurus, right? You almost don't get any better than that. And it's like you, I am just sick of the change. It is just relentless and nonstop. It's like every day I've got to figure out where I am. Well, so Pluto in Aquarius, it brings you into that. And it is, if nothing else, it is going to help you adapt to this wildly gadgetized, digitized, electrified, social mediafied, artificial intelligified world. And not only give you indicate the existence of the gradual dawning maturity of a point of orientation, but also a sense of calling. This is two, they are related and they are both very important. And one of the most disturbing things about the world that we live in is that it always feels like the bottom is falling out. So you've done quite a bit of experiencing the bottom falling out spiritually with Pluto in Capricorn all of these years. And now you have new opportunities to express what you've learned through some form of leadership in the outer world. Now, I would say that this is not, given all else that is going on in 2025 and 2026, and then into 2027, Chiron enters Taurus, that actually your personal sphere will continue to be much more important than the public sphere. But what Pluto in Aquarius is indicative of is the opportunity to go into public sphere, i.e. corporate or government or aspirational or climbing in your career or being something other than Instagram famous, being known for who you are and what you do. It is a kind of a passport there. But I think that even if we subtract any concept of you in an active leadership position, which is not necessary to subtract, but I'm just saying we don't necessarily need it. What you are fortunate to have is, for you, a point of orientation in this obscene, absurd, you know, changing every 5 minutes world, all of which, by the way, is we're just getting hosed down every 30 seconds by the influence of the digital environment. That is what all of this destabilization is. If I've gone now 26 minutes into this reading and have not said this, that's really impressive. But I'm telling you that's what we are living with. What the world is crumbling under is consciousness crumbling under the entirely destabilizing power of total immersion in the digital realm. There's nowhere to escape it. Not if you're living through, you know, if you're going through your average day. You can go offline for a day, but sooner or later you got to see who needs your attention, checking your email, and you got to buy something, and so you're going to swipe your card somewhere sooner or later, right? Sooner meaning like a day or two. Pluto is helping you make this less meaningful and less chaotic. Now, that said, what I was doing there was hedging on the issue of like you're stepping out into some major role in the world, which may not be true. But even if it's not true, you necessarily remain a spiritual point of orientation for the people about you. Not all leadership gets into the New York Times or even the Kingston Times. The leadership is the most effective when it is among one's immediate circle of people who are influenced by the presence of someone in their lives. And here is where Pluto in Aquarius becomes a very, very important influence. And then we have the most distinctly personal activity in three of the most personal houses. Aries, your 12th. One of the things about Taurus that makes a Taurus is Aries in the 12th. And then Uranus entering the second, your house of values. By the way, having gone through another one of these Pluto and Capricorn-like things where it was just like a laugh every minute, where like there's just not like 2 days or 2 hours that bore much in the way of resemblance to each other. And if you've managed to stay in communion with some of the things that you people, things, situations, your home that you value the most, good work. And, you know, the next question is, all right, when you fully reevaluate everything, what exactly needs to change? And then add one more, Jupiter entering Cancer, your third place. Well, that's a lot of change on a personal level. I don't think you're necessarily going to be too worried about what's going on in the big, wide, intimidating, imposing world around you. All right, here is a little bit more of our Taurus cousin, Brian Eno. Thank you. Vanadium from Music for Installations by Brian Eno. The enduring artist, one of the great things about Taurus, at least for everybody else, is that, well, it's pretty good for them too, is that Taurus artists are enduring artists and have impact. And Eno is the, by far, the maestro, the godfather of music producers, who has transformed the likes of U2, David Bowie. I've had a couple of others in mind right there, Talking Heads. Powerhouse artists, really, like some of the most influential artists Eno has helped to bring out. And what he does is he doesn't make them like he is. He makes them like they are. That's the beauty of Eno. His chart deserves a good reading during this little era, where I'm going to turn as many people onto as much of his music as I possibly can. Okay, so in this segment, we're going to talk mainly about three houses, where pretty much everything that you're experiencing can be summed up. Now, remember that astrology is not causing anything. Astrology is not causing you to experience anything any more than the speedometer is making the car go 85 on the New York State Thruway. The gas pedal, steering, you know, all that, that's making the car go 85. The speedometer is telling you how fast you're going, and astrology is a little more like that. Astrology is a little more of the source of information, the meter reading, the indication, the symbolic representation. So if I slip up in my language, where I am on the cause and effect thing. Now, there is absolutely spectacular, like never before experienced astrology happening in Aries right now, and probably the most important thing that you can understand about what it means to be Taurus by sun sign is not that you're sensual and you like chocolate and whipped cream and sex and your house has got to be cozy and you don't want wires everywhere. Oh, good. Thanks. That's very handy. I'm glad we know that. You could have told me. Is that you have Aries in the 12th place. Now, why is that so interesting? It's interesting because Aries brings the initiative and the I am-ness to the astrological palette of colors and of energies. Aries is about initiative. It is about turning the key to your personal universe, and it also can bring a very strong sense of one's self-concept and one's journey of self-development. We look to Aries for those things. But you have it in the 12th. And the 12th is the house of Bic lighters, guitar picks, and socks, and whatever that's in lipsticks, that disappear into some alternate dimension. There can be whole people missing if you've got some important luminary in the 12th house or some planet in the 12th house. That can represent a phase, an aspect of your existence that has gone missing. Or it's just kind of lost between the dimensions, or it fell between the couch cushions. I recently plucked a debit card of a girlfriend I hadn't seen since 2016 out of the couch cushions. Like, oh, that's where you were. Well, you've got Aries there. And so there can be this, like, it's super spiritual in that you're always looking for the aspect of yourself that's gone missing. And this, the super spiritual joke is, well, that's that's kind of existential. People are looking, consciously or not, for this part of themselves that has gone missing. Often, by the way, in the form of searching for a relationship that they feel will in some way complete them. This is really the biggest, most pervasive, and most challenging expression of this phenomenon of, you know, needing to complete oneself in relationship. And, you know, be mindful of that. Fortunately, your relationships have a tendency to, they will either veer into very, very sexual territory where that is like bonding on a level that most people don't comprehend, or spiritual territory, Sagittarius on the 8th, Scorpio 7th, that's the sexual on a level that most mortals don't comprehend, and Sagittarius on the 8th is spiritual bonding on a level that most mortals comprehend, and that ultimately is where the relationship is consummated. So, if no other astrologer has ever said this to Taurus, someone write this down. No matter how incredibly sexual your relationships are, maybe have been, were at one time, you wish they were, the physical, the emotional, the hormonal, and all of that, ultimately, your relationships are spiritually consummated. That's where the actual, now, a lot of religions would agree with me on this. But we get this nifty image of it in astrology because, you know, that Scorpio 7th, the house of pair bonding and like meeting up and hooking up, that morphs into Sagittarius on the 8th, the real common ground, common values point of merging. Sag, cosmic, that's the thing that's driving you, attracting you. That's attracting you, that's compelling, that is drawing you toward it at all times. But now we've got something else going on. The amount of activity in Aries is, it defies any description or explanation. We're going to have to see what this is. But for you, it is a series of events. The word tectonic comes to mind, like plates of the continental plates kind of bumping into one another, and they, like, you know, they move 6 inches and the whole city falls down. Like, that's what happens when there is an earthquake. How many? A couple of feet. But how much does a tectonic plate move during a major earthquake? That's what's going on in Aries. It's going on in the form of two distinct events. The first of which, the longest building up of, is Chiron conjunct Eris. This is a replay of the Chiron Eris cycle that came up in 1971, 72, and it is more than I can. If I were to start talking about this in any deep way, I could go on for an hour straight. Maybe that's an invitation to do something specific like that. But what this involves, the Chiron-Eris conjunction, involves reclaiming yourself from all the damage that's been done to you and humanity by complete and total overexposure to electrical and digital conditions. Now, I don't expect you to, you know, read Marshall McLuhan books and take the 8-week course with Andrew McLuhan on understanding media. I would just say, for the moment, just take my word long enough to check me out here, check out my theory here. But that Eris in Aries, which goes back to the 1920s, represents the total shock to the human race, the whole thing, every one of us shocked by mass electrical communication. Boom. Suddenly, everyone's sitting around the radio listening to Gandhi, Hitler, Roosevelt, somebody. And this basically launches, it like puts humanity into a catapult and cuts the thing and out goes flying. Eris in Aries. And this has been going on continuously now for more than a century, and we keep getting walloped. And the walloping is humans getting further and further from a sense of their own existence, further and further from having a clear state of mind that contains a usable sense of, a navigable sense of identity. Useful. It's supposed to be useful. Identity is not supposed to be a thing like a little tag, a little thing, put a little button on. I'm non-binary. What the fuck does that mean? Right? Everybody's got their little pin on these days. Well, I'm this. Well, I'm that. I'm a biracial artist. Congratulations. I'm a Sicilian motherfucker. All right. But beneath that charade, there is having a sense of who you are and acting based on that sense of who you are. This is difficult for you because you've got Aries in the 12th house. But there is, this is going to act a little bit like Chiron. You know, as I was saying before, you know, you, if you have an injury, you work the, you know, you work the injury, you strengthen the injury, but you have to bring awareness around the injury, and that awareness building is exactly what happens with Chiron. Now, this is going to work with or without Chiron. There, it happens that Chiron is here right now, has been since 2018, that the sense of something gone missing is inspiring of, motivating of, a quest to find the thing missing, even if you don't know exactly quite what's happening, meaning you haven't given it words yet, you haven't given it a name necessarily, and even if, yeah, you don't even have a concept of it. You know, you're, for example, you don't know you're adopted. Like, say, pick a hypothetical situation. You go through so many years of your life, you don't know you're adopted. Ah, but you became a certain way because you were adopted. You were driven to do certain things that don't necessarily equate directly with adoption. Pursuing certain kinds of success, pursuing certain kinds of contact, maybe always seeking out the example of older people, for example. So now what we've got with Chiron conjunct Eris is a kind of a supernova of internal self-awareness. This is not necessarily very comfortable. This is not necessarily very easy. And Chiron and Eris can pick the world up and spin it on its finger. They are one of those things that's what Chiron and Eris combined can do. I mean, Pluto square Eris 2020 through like 2023 or something like that. Picked the world up and spun it on its finger. And now we have Chiron conjunct Eris. And by the way, it may be, well, certainly there's an invitation of Chiron conjunct Eris to be as aware now as we were unaware in the 2020 era, 21, that these two absolute nightmare years, which have left a very serious scar on all of us. The trust is completely under assault. And what I would say, speaking of trust, is that Chiron Eris in Aries, tucked away in this hidden dimension of your 12th house, is saying, this time in your life is about learning how to trust yourself. Not externals, not needing validation, not even, I would say not seeking validation, but like instinctively avoiding validation, knowing it is not what is going to be the thing that creates you, because you are now in easily the greatest time of your life to identify, learn about, and create yourself from the inside. But this is requiring going inside. The entire nature of the digital environment, as described by Eris, has been to drive everyone and everything outside of themselves, outside. to push us out of our internal orientation, an orientation that took thousands of years of evolution of consciousness for the human race to get. Largely driven by the visual sense, by the way, by book technology, completely rearranging the balance of all of the senses, and humans went from being basically an oral O-R-A-L to O and A-U-R-A-L hearing, speaking and hearing a society, tribal society, into being highly individuated, subject, object, that's me, that's her, driven by print technology and books because it did such a number on consciousness by shifting the intention to visual. Well, here you are getting in what you might call stark relief the difference between you and it, but the difference is only going to be apparent if you bring your focus inward. Now, this is not, and this aspect forms at the end of May, approximately 1 month from today. It's the 27th or the 26th. A lot happens around that, and along with the Gemini new moon. So, you know, keep your finger on that pulse. But what I'm saying is that if you are feeling restless and a certain kind of extremely uncomfortable, stick with yourself. There's a lot of inspiration to just like drink or avoid or elude or evade or like who needs therapy or whatever. However, keep your focus inward. Journal, spend time alone, take time offline, you know, go into the skiff. That's like a facility where you're out of communication with the outside world. It's like the security device. I think it's called an SCIF. Make yourself a little skiff somewhere relate to yourself for long enough, for periods of time, an hour, an afternoon, a day, whatever you can do, to keep bringing your orientation back inwardly and saying to yourself, "Hi, self, what are you trying to tell me?" And if the pressure heats up, which it seems likely to do through the month of May, which is, you know, this is your solar return is all about this, and then this whole thing extends out into the fall in the autumn of 2025, Northern Hemisphere, and then out into early 2026. And at the end of this, we have begun a major new cycle of human experience, but this in you is this highly impressive internal kind of starburst going on. Now, while that's going on, there's another exceedingly rare major event happening in Aries, again, in your internal interior zone, and that is Neptune has arrived in Aries and Saturn is about to arrive in Aries. And then I have not mentioned this very much, but a slow mover, a real beauty of a planet called Borsisi. All of these things are right in the first degree of Aries. And what I would say this sums up as, right, because you could, you know, I could do a talk on Neptune at Aries and then Saturn at Aries and then put them in the 12th and then contextualize them personally, but if I were to just sum all of that up, is that you are being bestowed with astounding visionary power to imagine yourself into the next stage of your existence. Neptune can be deceiving. Saturn can be depressive or oppressive. Neither of them, I mean, what can you really say about them when in Aries, except that that's like you can't argue with Aries, and you can't argue with the Aries point, the first degree of Aries, where this is all happening. I mean, this is I mean, this is like the 1969 Mets winning the World Series. Like, it's just not, you can't really say what this is. It is so significant and large, and yet for you, what I'm saying is, remember that this may come with a sense of inward pressure in some way, which you need to vent in meaningful ways, i.e. creative expression, music, orgasm, nature. Do not let that pressure build up, Adair. And then practice the art of having faith in yourself. Envision something that you want that is beyond what is familiar and that you know and that you have. And finally, in this mixture, collaborating in with it, is this, it's a classical Kuiper object. It's called Borsisi. It was discovered by, I believe, Jane Liu is one of the discoverers. I knew Jane for a while. Chad Trujillo, a guy I work with, Mike Brown. They're very lovely people, by the way. I mean, some of these astronomers are just, I think, exemplary scientists. And this somehow got named Borsisi. And the easiest way to understand Borsisi is to read a book by Kurt Vonnegut called Cat's Cradle, written in 1963, kind of a failure in its moment, like The Great Gatsby, a lot of things that were definitely not failures. But the only flaw of Cat's Cradle is you will wish it was longer. It's very short, and the chapters are like a page and a half. So Vonnegut whips through it fast. Now, you just probably took 30 rewrites to get there. And the whole of the planet Borsisi is contained in this dilemma presented in Cat's Cradle. But essentially, it involves the power of belief and that very fine line where deception and belief merge into one another. And this is going to be in this triple conjunction with Neptune and Saturn in your 12th place in Aries. This is saying do every last thing that you possibly can do. And it may be quite subtle to just keep coming back to having faith in yourself. Now, there's a little more in Aries. We're going to get to it in the third section. But to sum up, there is highly significant, extremely rare, like going back thousands of years, certainly on the Saturn Neptune alignment, and then going back about 60 years, a little bit less, and then back 500 years on Chiron Eris, and this is happening, all happening within you, deep in this place that you might not have a name for, deep in a place that has been invaded, that has been raided by digital technology, and for many young people, never existed, never will exist. They have no concept of it any more than they would be able to read a roadmap. But you can. And really, essentially, all roads on that map are leading inward. This, by the way, for 2025, is a rare and beautiful thing. And I would say, get it while it's hot, because it's definitely hot, and you definitely have the opportunity of a lifetime to know yourself, to learn about yourself, to discover yourself in a way that very few people will get to do in our lifetimes, in our time in history. All right, let's come back to a little bit of Brian. This is the world without wind. So in this section, I'd like to go through Well, it looks like I've got a few houses to cover, but I'm gonna sum them up in message format, and then any details that you need can talk about or think about. Okay, so you've now lived through 7 years of Uranus in Taurus. It's not exactly over, but I am moving the clock ahead. Uranus enters Gemini in July. But nonetheless, we are very close, and it happens within this solar year, and then it makes its final ingress at some point in 2026, usually about a nine-month, I'm just taking a wild guess here. Let's see. Around March, Uranus will settle into Gemini. But it's not too early to think about it, and it's not too late to be thinking about the messages of Uranus in Taurus. And nothing quite says you got to do what you got to do like Uranus in Taurus. And that is great. And then there is the impact on your relationships. And sometimes it is necessary to do things despite the impact on our relationships. It just is necessary. However, what I'm suggesting here is that you take this last kind of last spell of Uranus and Taurus, and you work your way back through your relationship experiences with significant others and work colleagues and partners and business partners and bosses and important employees or contractors, anything that was a significant relationship and that your life in some way depended on in 2018 or beyond, and just kind of count up the impact that your choices have had on those relationships. And then take this with you. More changes are coming. You have more decisions to make. And it's always this fine line, you know, between acting on your own behalf and acting within the context of a relationship and not being trapped in your relationships, which many people are, versus taking the feeling of being trapped in a relationship, whether or not you are trapped in the relationship. If you feel like you are, that's an important feeling to follow up on. And ask yourself what you would do if you were in some situation where you got to do what you got to do, but to mitigate the impact on the people around you. What would you do differently? How would you handle situations like that? Having learned what you've learned, and you know, maybe you did and maybe you didn't act in ways that were conscientious and respectful and understanding and seeking input and guidance from people, and maybe you just had to do whatever the heck it was, and you decided that it was necessary and you were right and that was that. So Uranus continues to be active in your chart. We're going to get there next, but the relationship piece, very important. People count on you and they count on your stability. This should not, however, kind of doom you to always living up to expectations. That's certainly been a challenge for you, but rather finding a place where there is a kind of an opening to get it right. And to get it as right as you can, which means that if you're in a relationship with someone, then that gives them some standing in your life. That's what it's supposed to mean anyway. It doesn't mean they run you, control you, or whatever, but they should have some standing. All right. Now, you have grown and changed and transformed, and part of the review that I suggest you go through during these this like last partial year of Uranus spending some of its time in Taurus, kind of be like 50-50 between now and March, is put a pin in the map for where you were at in 2018, 2019, then see where you've come out or are coming out on the other end of this. Now, Uranus goes into Gemini, and Sedna has gone into Gemini too. Now, this is another distinctive feature in the Taurus solar chart. And by the solar chart, by the way, it's like how Linda Goodman was able to write these incredible sun sign chapters in the book Sun Signs, and how the best of the horoscope writers just kind of get it right. The thing about Taurus is that it has Gemini in the second place. The second place is about the value structure, the value system. To have Gemini on a house associated with values is to suggest that you have two parallel sets of values, and they may conflict. You may be a cheapskate with very expensive tastes. You may not want to work very hard, but you might like nice things. Some of them are going to come back to finances. That's the second place. And so the exercise of learning about having Gemini in the second is the exercise of seeing where your values conflict with one another and where they harmonize with one another, and noticing the difference between when you're harmonizing with yourself and when you're conflicting with yourself. And I think that it is quite probable that much of the inner conflict that you experience could be resolved through a kind of a self-therapy process of sizing up your, the conflicts in your value system. And if you ever find yourself in conflict, it is always fair to say, Where are my values conflicting? What two things are not in sync with one another? Where am I sending a mixed signal to the world? Where am I professing one thing and living another? Where do I mean, it's kind of like if you like to go to bed late and you like to get up early, you can't really be that upset about the fact that you're real tired in the morning, even though you like to get up early because you went to bed late, because you like to go to bed late. So there's ways to work that out. You can be during the week, I will go to bed early and get up early, and then on the weekends, I will get up late, and oops, oh, wait, the farmer's market starts at 9, I like to get, you got to work this out, right? This is a typical kind of inward Taurus conflict that can burn up a lot of energy and calls for examination. Now, I'm thinking this may be extant on a bigger level, right? There might be bigger things that this is about than just something like that. Okay, so the presence of Uranus kind of says that you are going to go beyond a dualistic value system and go into a kind of total reinvention of your priorities. Where Uranus is the total reinvention. You've had Uranus moving through Taurus. There's been a lot of reinvention going on with Uranus going through Taurus. And now it's coming into the expression of yourself as you continue this reinvention, as you basically break it down to facts and figures, dollars and cents, and the code that you live by. The second is the code you live by. The second is your value structure. It's your priority structure. And Uranus is kind of indicating that, you know, you might be getting ready to just blow the whole thing sky high. Okay, so and with Uranus, you don't usually get a lot of time to contemplate now, because it's quick acting. And the other thing about Uranus is in the second is where financial matters are concerned. It is tempting to take big risks. It is tempting to take big gambles. And you are risk averse until you're not, right? Typical kind of touring thing is like, I'm so sick of being risk averse, now I'm going to risk everything. So you might want to interpose like a 1 week delay in doing that. And also, risk involves an assessment of how much you have to lose. So, I mean, for example, if you're going to travel spontaneously and maybe kind of spend half your money taking a trip, okay, that's one form of risk. It's recoverable. It's recoverable. It's not like you risked everything for a total uncertainty. Here we're talking about in the case of spontaneous travel, more or less known quantities involved. It's the situations where there is not a known quantity involved, where there are major variables left unexamined. Okay, so pay attention to that. And it is possible to have, and you will know this, you'll feel this, significant financial gains under the influence of Uranus in the second house. And it is possible to have significant losses. It kind of speaks of a time where there is like you win some, you lose some, but don't put all your money into Bitcoin, because that kind of volatility is not going to work well with the volatility of Uranus in particularly Gemini in your second house. So that would mean you say, okay, it's possible, hypothetical, not a financial advisor, it's possible to make a lot of money in Bitcoin. I'm going to put in this amount and that's it. Right, so you apportion things. It's hedging, basically. Be mindful of that. And look, there may come that moment where you're like, screw everything. I'm going for it. I'm going all in. And there are times when we do that. And even if you win, oh great. And if you don't, you start over again. But you're someone who, you need that foundation of stability. You need that foundation of stability. And just remember that. I have a Taurus friend who said, Neil McDonough, one of my consummate Taurus friends, and has Venus and Aries, like all the Taurus people I know, all of them. I have had three really important girlfriends with Taurus and Venus in Aries. And I told that to Melanie Reinhardt, and she said, oh, I know what you mean. So, but Neil, brother, said, well, the way I like to live is I always have next month's rent saved in the bank. So we always, he was younger. We probably have more than that now, but he always liked to know where the next, never have to worry about where the next month's rent was coming from. So that's, there's wisdom in that, right? There's prudence in that. And so just make sure you know where the groceries are coming from and then if you're going to go to Vegas, you say, all right, I'm not gambling more than $2,000 and that's it. And if I lose all $2,000, I'm not going to spend another $2,000 trying to get it back. Okay. Next, feeling good. Oh boy. Jupiter in Cancer. This is nice. This is really nice. And this takes effect in June, and it goes clear straight through to a year, 2026. And I haven't said how mental I've noticed all of my Taurus friends and lovers and cousins to be. There's something of grounding your mental abilities. Now, there's an aspect pattern that you can see. I've drawn it in purple. I mean, the planets are all in purple, but there's two purple lines that go from Jupiter in the third house up to Saturn and Neptune in the 12th. This is one aspect pattern. It is a very important aspect pattern. And this is highly grounding. I know I'm a writer and I believe in writing, but boy, you could do a lot of good for yourself and potentially something special for a couple of other people by dedicating yourself to your writing. And just as self-therapy, this would be brilliant. I mean, I don't know, you probably have heard of The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. A really wonderful thing. And one of the best things in The Artist's Way is morning pages, writing out just without judging it. You know, you just write it out. And the thing is that the thing with the 12th is there's always so much going on in the 12th house that, you know, even if you have some profoundly revelatory dream, that's a 12th house thing, you might also have the feeling that you are just sticking a spoon in the waterfall. And so the way to vent that pressure consistently, the way to stay in contact with the unconscious, like that's what the 12th is. You could skip back to the first section where I'm going on and on about Aries and what it means to have Aries in the house where we lose guitar picks and lighters and lipsticks. Is that it's kind of like the unconscious, and then the way that you tap the unconscious is through your dream life and through artistic experiences. And writing is going to be so very, very helpful to you. One other thing, and I haven't, I'm also kind of surprised I haven't mentioned it. One of the themes of all this 12th house is to be honest with yourself about your sexuality. That means your sexual feelings, sexual history, sexual desires, sexual needs, the sexual injuries that you want to heal, your sense of your own potential. We live in a time where, you know, you don't really have to go through any kind of a deep coming out process anymore. Just kind of put a button on and, like, everyone claps and cheers. But that subverts the whole process of really going deep underneath the surface of what you believed, what you were told, and how you've been, and just being real with you about who you are as your daily dharma in any facet of life. All right, Taurus, thank you for your trust and your time. Signing off from Kingston. Lots of love. And bye for now. Thank you.